welcome to the New Beginnings message of the week. We hope you enjoy this message from our Sunday service. For more information about our church, please visit us online at newbeginningscos.com.
So the first time I talked about this, what I walked us through was more than us understanding why the storm is happening, we have to get our hearts set on how we're going to get through it. How we get through the storm is in our connection with the Lord. It's in our intimacy with Him. And when we have that as the foundation point, then it's okay to start thinking about why is the storm happening. Not in the sense of who do we blame for it, but in the sense of how can I learn from this? How can I discover why I'm in this? And maybe, is there anything I can do to prevent it from happening in the future? In other words, did I make a big mistake that just caused a storm in my life? Did I just quit my job before I had the next job lined up? Did I blow up at my spouse and cause an issue? And so I went over last week kind of the different reasons that we encounter storms of life. When we talked about natural storms, just that happen because we live in a fallen world, and we talked about storms of the enemy and how we do have spiritual attack that can happen. And we talk about storms that we ourselves caused that we have to get through. And in either situation, in any of those, we always have a responsibility to take. Even if the storm that I'm in is not my fault, I still have a responsibility for how I come out of it and for what how I respond to it. Today, I really want to dive into the specific idea of how do we grow through the storm. And I mentioned this the very first week, but have any of you guys ever seen somebody who's gone through something difficult, who's gone through a really painful, hard season, and they seem to come out either unscathed or better than they were before? Have you ever watched that happen? And I think most of us have seen the reverse of that as well, where somebody goes through something incredibly painful and somebody, they just come out more angry, more bitter, more like, ugh. And how we come out on the other side of the storm, I think, is something that God is heavily invested in. And I talked last week again, I don't believe that God specifically releases pain into our lives because He wants to test us or hurt us or see how we'll respond. But pain does happen, and I do believe that God is invested in where we go with it and how we respond to it. So growing through the storm, how do we go through the pain? How do we go through the struggle, whether it's financial or emotional or inner healing related? How do we walk through it and actually come out stronger for it? I think it's a really powerful verse that we see in James. In James 1, verses 2 and 4, New King James, he says, "My brethren, count it all joy." That's easy to say, right? "Count it all joy when you fall into various trials." What? Joy? "Knowing that the testing of your faith produces patience, but let patience have its perfect work, that you may be perfect and complete, lacking nothing." I really like the way that this is said in the Passion Translation. He says, "My fellow believers, when it seems as though you are facing nothing but difficulties, see it as an invaluable opportunity to experience the greatest joy that you can, for you know that when your faith is tested, it stirs up power within you to endure all things. And then, as your endurance grows even stronger, it will release perfection into every part of your being until there is nothing missing and nothing lacking." Nothing missing and nothing lacking. Going through the struggle, going through the trial, actually can give us cause for joy because it leads to completeness. It's an interesting thought. James paints this picture, and you know, I'm sure whoever read this first would have been like, dude, your whole book could have been just about this. Like, your whole letter really could have just covered this topic. Can you expand a little bit more on how this works? Because it's so important to understand, when we go through hard things, joy is not what comes to mind. Joy is usually the furthest thing from our minds. We're looking for the joy on the other side of the storm when it's over, but while we're going through it, I don't know about you guys, but it's really easy to get a little whiny and complainy when you're in that space of the trial. When I was in high school, in my walk with the Lord, I was really, really passionate about having complete purity and wholeness and my heart just being for Him and nothing but Him. And anytime I would make a mistake, anytime I would struggle, or anytime I would have distractions that would come up in my life, I had this picture that popped into my head. I don't know about you guys, but I'm very visual in my spiritual walk. And the picture was of me ascending this mountain, and it was like I'm trying to climb this mountain. It's the mountain of the Lord. It's the mountain of closeness with Him. It's the mountain of intimacy. And I would get this picture in my mind when I would have times of struggle of me just lying on the side of the mountain, face down in the mud, rain pouring down, and I'm like, it's too slippery. I can't get up. I can't keep going. And it would feel so painful because it's like I want my walk with Him to expand and to grow. But right now, things are hard, and I'm going through hard things, and it feels like I can't do anything else. Has anybody ever experienced that feeling? Is that a familiar feeling? When we're in that place, that's the place where we have a decision point to make. And we can say, either this storm is going to overwhelm me and it's going to knock me back, or something inside of me that the Lord has placed there is going to rise up, and I'm going to move on, and I'm going to go further in the middle of the pain. And I would have this thing in me that would rise up, and it was almost this kind of holy anger where it was like, I'm not made for the mud. I'm made for the mountain, and I will get up, and I will keep going, and I don't care if it hurts. And it wasn't about ignoring my pain, but it was about saying, I won't let difficulty or struggle or pain keep me from pursuing Him. Because often what happens is when the struggles come up, we run to our instant sources of comfort. We run to the things that make us feel better, feel more secure, which so often are just distractions. But what would happen if I say, it's really difficult and uncomfortable for me when I'm in pain to come before the Lord? Because I'm sometimes afraid maybe He'll ask me to do something, or maybe He'll have correction for me, or maybe just I'm just more comfortable with this stuff and I'm more used to it. But if we would take the difficult road of saying, Lord, it's Your heart that I want. I'm going to get back up and I'm going to keep going after You. We reconnect with Him and we find strength to keep moving forward. And what ends up happening is instead of the storm knocking us back, we trudge through and we make it forward. There's a movie. Has anybody seen Twister? Old movie, but we watched it with our kids like a couple months ago, and it was fun. It's a fun movie. One of the things I love, though, is they have this device they're trying to use to analyze the storm, and it's all these little sensors, and they can't get them to fly in the storm. All that keeps happening is all of their equipment gets knocked over, it gets destroyed, and the storm is just obliterating everything. And finally, the only way that they find to overcome the storm is essentially to go with it. And what they do is they create little wings on these sensors. And so when the storm comes, the wind actually works for them, not against them. It actually lifts the sensors into the storm, and all of a sudden they're able to analyze and get this data. But what happens is instead of fighting against the storm and saying, this can't be happening, like we talk about in our lives, instead of going, why am I going through this, and the complaining and the fighting, and we fight the storm, but what would happen if we say, I'm going to actually let this push me closer to the direction that I'm supposed to be going in. And we actually allow the Lord to use it to our advantage. That's what we see so often in scriptures. We see people going through painful times, and I'm going to bring up some specifically, but we see people going through pain, and then we see them shift, and the Lord actually uses the hardness to their advantage. I won't dive super deep into this, but the story of Joseph is a perfect example. It doesn't get much worse than your brothers hating you, trying to kill you, selling you into slavery, being accused of adultery by your owner, being thrown into jail to rot and be forgot. That was supposed to be used to destroy him. That's the storm. And in the middle of that situation, he begins to go, I'm in a cell with bugs and rats and a couple of guys I can hear crying next door. And instead of sitting in the woe is me, he starts to go, what can I bring into this environment? What came with me? The reality is, what came with him was rags and his own skin and faith in God. And in that faith, he was able to say, I'm able to begin imparting into this environment something new. And he began to shift the environment of the entire prison to where he ended up becoming one of the leaders of the prison. A prisoner became actually someone the jailer trusted so much that he would put him in charge of other prisoners. How wild is that? Going through the storm and saying, we're going to actually allow it to become something that builds us up. in Lord of the Rings, one of my favorite movies, there's a scene, and it gets me every single time, when Frodo looks at Gandalf. He's got this incredibly hard task, if you haven't seen the movie, and he looks at this mentor figure, and he says, "I wish none of this had happened." And Gandalf says to him, "So do all who live to see such times. But that is not for them to decide. All we have to decide is what to do with the time that is given to us." Sometimes we just get stuck in, "I wish none of this had happened." But we're so stuck in that we don't actually get to take the opportunity that's right in front of us to shift into a new place. So the first thing I want to talk about is how we can actually allow ourselves to be remodeled in the storm. We love remodeling shows. Has anybody seen Fixer Upper or No Demo Reno? Has anybody heard of No Demo Reno? We love that one because my wife was following the rambling redhead on Instagram for years before she got her own show. And we're like, yeah, we're so excited for her and so pumped. And our kids love the show. And the cool thing about a No Demo Reno is you don't tear down walls or gut the place. Like, you take what's existing and you just kind of bump it up a level. You just improve it. Well, the thing about storms in our lives is they're not neat and tidy like that. Storms usually cause us to be gutted. Storms of our lives usually cause things to be ripped down. But here's the thing. That's actually an opportunity for a renovation. Because sometimes there's things in us that don't belong the way that they are. Sometimes there's ways that we respond. There's unhealthy habits and patterns. There's ways of thinking about the Lord. And when we go through a storm, it's the perfect time because things are getting knocked down and blown all over. Instead of just trying to put everything back right where it was, it might be the Lord saying, "You know what? I got a dumpster bin out front. Why don't we take some of this and throw it in there, and I'm going to build this brand new. The way that you think about me in this area, the way that you respond to me, the way that you respond to yourself when these situations arise, I'm actually using this to get down to the root of it so we can pull the sick stuff out. There's rot in the walls. There's boards that need to be replaced." And the Lord goes, "I'm actually going to make it better than it was before." How many of you know he doesn't just restore us to what we were, but he does it better if we let him. We have to choose growth, though. We have to choose that when I'm going through the trial and the struggle and the storm, the question in my mind is not, "Why is this happening? Why is this happening? Why is this happening?" But the question in my mind is, "Lord, what is it you want me to learn in this situation?" In fact, sometimes I'm like, "Lord, if there's anything I did to cause this or anything you want to teach me, I want to soak up every lesson from this storm, like so completely." It's like having a juice box and you like, you know, I love juice boxes and I want to get every last drop. And you like hear the slurping at the bottom. You're like, "I want all of it. I want every bit of juice. If there is life in this storm, I want everything out of it so that I don't have to go through this again. Or if I do, I've already learned those lessons, and it's not going to be the same kind of storm that I'm going through right now." But we have to choose to grow. The interesting thing about growth, you know, my kids don't have to choose to grow. They just do. Like, my daughter, we buy her clothes, and it's like 4 months later, they don't fit. Our boys, we buy them shoes, and 4 months later, we buy them more shoes. Anybody who has kids knows that's what it's like. Growth happens. But spiritually, we have to choose growth, and we go through pain, and we go through struggle, and the goal of that has to be for us more than just to get to the other side of the pain, but to become something more through it. What can I learn about God and his nature? What are maybe patterns that I've had in my life that this is the perfect opportunity to stop or to start new patterns? Henry David Thoreau, I don't know if he was a believer. I don't think he was. But he has this beautiful quote. He says, "I went to the woods because I wished to live deliberately, to front only the essential facts of life and see if I could not learn what it had to teach, and not, when I came to die, discover that I had not lived. I wanted to live deep and suck out all the marrow of life, to live so sturdily and Spartan-like as to put to rout all that was not life." What would happen if, no matter what we're going through in a season, we said, "I want to put to rout, I want to throw out of myself anything that is not life, and I want to be filled with only the fullness of the life that Jesus offers." what was torn down can be built back better. Another quick example of this, I write a lot. You guys know I finished a book, but in many of my writings, I've had computer issues. And in one particular, I actually lost about two whole chapters of what I had written. Like two completed, not just completed, but like, I was like pumped about them. I was like, I felt the spirit as I was writing, and I like feel like this phrase is so nice, and you know, and it was gone, deleted, gone, disappeared. And the temptation in that moment is to go, I give up. I worked so hard. I spent months in prayer and in study and in time and process writing and feeling like it's all gone, it's all wasted. And I think sometimes that's what storms do. And the opportunity came to go, I either give up and I'm not going to do this, or I'm going to rewrite everything from scratch. And I chose to rewrite everything from scratch. And what ended up happening was what came out of that was better than what was there before. What came out of that was more me and more him than what had happened before. And it was an opportunity in disguise, but it was an opportunity that very easily could have just knocked me over and said, I'm done. Because it was painful. When we talk about learning lessons from the storm, there's another quote from a teacher, and he says, it seems that nothing less than some kind of pain will force us to release our grip on our small explanations and our self-serving illusions. Resurrection will always take care of itself whenever death is trusted. In other words, what that means is when we allow ourselves to die to ourselves, it's God that resurrects us. We don't need to fight for our own resurrection. And he says, it is the cross, the journey into the necessary night, of which we must be convinced, and then resurrection is offered as a gift. In this time of suffering, we have to ask ourselves, what are we going to do with our pain? Are we going to blame others for it? Are we going to try to fix it? No one lives on this earth without it. It is the great teacher, although none of us wants to admit it. If we do not transform our pain, we will transmit it in some form. I love that line, and I think it's powerful and true. If we don't allow the Lord to transform our pain, then it will be transmitted to other people around us. It will come out. And so when we go through these storms and these seasons, there's an intentionality we have to have. I want to look for a minute at the story of David in 1 Samuel 18. And I'm going to jump around a little bit because I want to really take a specific piece of this story that we're going to talk through. So 1 Samuel 18, start 5 to 11. Actually, it's not 5 to 11. I think it's just 5. Therefore, when Saul saw that David behaved wisely, he was afraid of him. Isn't it interesting? He said, David's behaving wisely and Saul's afraid of him. But all Israel and Judah loved David because he went out and came in before them. Moving on to verse 15 in that section, it says, thus Saul knew and saw that the Lord was with David, and that Michal, Saul's daughter, loved him, and Saul was still more afraid of David. So Saul became David's enemy continually. Then the princes of the Philistines went out to war, and so it was, whenever they went out, that David behaved more wisely than all the servants of Saul, so that his name became highly esteemed. I'm going to move on to 1 Samuel 19, verse 9, It says, as Saul sat in his house with his spear in his hand, and David was playing music with his hand, then Saul sought to pin David to the wall with the spear, but he slipped away from Saul's presence, and he drove the spear into the wall. So David fled and escaped that night. Saul's going through his own storm, and in his own storm, all he's focused on is blame. All he's focused on is this young upstart. Everybody loves him more than me. He's more wise than me. He's got more favor. He has what I should have, even though Saul's the one that's the king, and David is still just the son of a shepherd. But Saul is so frustrated with him that he's taking these, can you imagine being the guards in the room when this is happening? He's taking these spears and trying to chuck them at David. I can imagine the guards going, you know, we can teach you some skills here if you don't want to miss. And David's like, I'm glad for his aim. I'm not glad for his target, but I'm glad for his aim. And David escapes. But I want to pause in this story because there's a piece I want to talk about aside from today's message, and that's this. I talked last week about three causes of storms. Storms we cause, natural storms, and storms of the enemy, spiritual attack. What I didn't talk about, and I think it's important to just bring up, is that there are also storms in our lives that can be caused by other people. Storms that are caused by other people, just like what we're seeing in this situation, where there's a legitimate, abusive, violent attack. And in that situation, David does the smartest thing possible. He gets out of the room. This guy is coming after my life. This isn't the safest situation for me to be in. We can learn, and God can use any part of our story and any part of our pain. But I want to make it really clear, there are moments in life where there is attack that come from other people that sometimes we just need to process and heal from and have good community around us to walk us through to the other side. But there's also times where it's abusive and it's violent, and the best thing we can do is not to say, I'm going to go through this storm, but no, this is actually not okay, and to actually walk away. I just want to bring that up as an important note, because what David's experiencing here, this is a man that should have been a father to him. This is a man that should have been his mentor in what it is to be a king, literally trying to take his life, and David has to run for his life. Saul's going through his storm, and David, can you imagine, he's got to have this feeling of every step that I'm taking, every right thing that I try to do is winding up wrong. It's putting me in a worse situation. The more I try to serve Saul, he's having these spiritual attacks, and David's playing music for him, and David's like, this isn't what I came here to do, but I guess it is. And so he's like, okay, I'm going to play music, and he's doing this, and it's soothing Saul, but everything, every right thing he does to try to serve seems to be going more and more wrong. And so the storm that David's in, can you imagine how painful it would be to know you've been anointed, you're going to be the next king, your family has ostracized you, nobody else knows this but Saul and David and David's family, and David's family, after he was anointed, is still like, hey, go run errands and carry food to your brothers. They don't treat him like he's going to be the next king. Can you imagine how painful it would be then to feel like you've been adopted into the king's family? He's accepted you into his hall. You're being taught with him. David actually has a seat with Saul's family when they go and have meals. And when he's not there, Saul notices. So you know that he's like, finally, I get to learn something about what I know I'm called to. I know my destiny, and I have a situation to be taught. And then that man tries to kill him. Can you imagine the pain of the storm of him running away and living in a cave? Because he will be destroyed, and half the country is looking for him. The crazy thing about David is he had every opportunity to go, doing the right thing hasn't worked. I'm going to take this by force. And if you read through the stories in Kings and Chronicles, you see that happen again and again and again. We see people who go, well, I don't like the way this guy's doing thing. We're just going to have a coup. We're just going to make sure he's taken care of, or we're going to lie and manipulate. And David's like, I'm not going to do that. In fact, what's crazy is he winds up with 400 people, the malcontents, the people who owed the government money, the people who were criminals and outcasts for whatever reason. So he's got this cave full of complaining people who want nothing more than him to kill Saul. Talk about cancel culture, right? Saul's trying to cancel David, and then David's men are trying to get him to cancel Saul, and they're like, you cancel him back. And David's like, I won't do it. He actually says, oh, where is it? This is what David says to them. He says, stay with me, do not fear, for he who seeks my life seeks your life, but with me you shall be safe. David knows what Saul's up to, but he's not going to play Saul's game. And what ends up happening as a result of this is he takes the lessons of the storm that he's going through, and he lets it happen. He lets himself walk through it. He lets the pain be felt and be experienced. Sometimes we try to avoid our pain by fighting our problem. And we think, if I fight my problem and beat my problem, then I won't have to feel the pain. Well, the pain's still there regardless. And so David says, I'm going to go through this. Here's the crazy thing. I don't know if I've said this before, but I used to live in Michigan. And when I was in high school, I loved the cold. because I came from Florida, humid, hot. We'd have to look for places with air conditioning to go inside. So go to Michigan, snowing, blizzard. I'm like, yes, I can do this. However, it did get extremely cold. We're talking still humid cold because we had the lakes there, and it would get wind chill like negative 20. So I was like, I love the cold, so I want to find a way to endure it without having to go inside, without having to run away from it. So what I ended up doing was, initially, when you get in cold, your body fights it, right? And your body shivers, and when there's wind, you tighten up against the wind. Do you know what I'm talking about? And what I ended up doing was I said, you know what? You're not going to beat me this way to the cold. And I started to change my pattern, and what I would do is I would actually let the wind cut through me. And I would say, you do it whatever you want. My body temperature is fine. I'm going to enjoy this. And I would actually relax my body and allow the wind to cut through me. And I never, like, I was the kid, and this is no lie, my family will tell you, I would go in Chacos to school. I'd walk through the snow. I'd wear a sweater. I wouldn't wear a coat. I wear sweaters all the time in the winter, but I wouldn't wear a coat unless it was absolutely needed. And I would go out, and the reason that I could stand being in the cold without even shivering was because I wasn't fighting it. I actually allowed myself to adjust to what was happening around me, to the environment that I was in, and I actually loved it. That's how we can begin to grow in the storm. Instead of fighting against what's happening, it's not fair, we begin to say, how do I grow in this situation? Because here's the thing, if we're not growing, if we're just allowing it to happen and being at the mercy of it, because there is another alternative, right? We can fight against the storm, but we can also just lay down, just like I did on that mountain in my mind, and just go, I give up. I'm just going to let it beat me, and I'm going to, when someday the storm will pass, and when it passes, I'll be okay. But what we don't realize is when it passes, we're going to be filled with so much pain and wrecked by it because we've been going through it just at the mercy of it, getting beat by the storm. You're not going to win by laying down and taking it. You're also not going to win by trying to beat and fight it. The way that we win is by going, I have an inner heat. I have a strength. I have the Lord with me. It doesn't matter who's seeking my life. You're with me, you'll be safe. And I know that I'm safe because I'm with him. The last piece of the storm that we can learn from is a new faith and a new gratitude. See, the faith that I have now, it's not the childish faith of I'm good as long as things around me are good. But it's the faith of I've been tested and I've endured and I've seen the goodness of the Lord in good times and I've seen the goodness of the Lord in bad times. And I have endured and walked to the other side and I've seen his face only gets more clear if I stay focused on him. There's nothing, listen, we talked about the first week. There's a lie that says he will never give you more than you can handle. It's ridiculous. First of all, he's not the one that always is the giver of our storms. But second of all, yes, we have all faced more than we can handle. All of us, everybody in this room has faced more than you can handle without him. With him, it doesn't mean we can just fix everything, but it does mean we can walk through it and not come out scathed. It's just like the burning furnace where we see people that get thrown in the fire and they come out unburnt because Jesus is in their midst. And in the same way, we get to walk through the storm and it doesn't mean it's not painful. It doesn't mean it's not hard, but we can walk through it and get to the other side stronger, more confident, and knowing he's a God that never left. I've said this before, but we have to keep a spiritual optimism about what God's going to do on the other side. There's no such thing as a faith-filled pessimist. And so when peace, when we're on the mountain, one last piece I want to talk about is, have you ever felt like you're going through a storm, you're going through something difficult, and it's like, I've done this before. It's like you're going around the mountain. It's like I've seen this tree before. I've seen this rock before. Like I'm going through the same pain, the same storm, the same cycle all over again. Is that a familiar feeling to people? And that's one of the most discouraging things we can experience when we're going through a storm. But I'll tell you what the Lord does. When we are walking through it with him, we may go through other seasons that seem familiar. But the way that I like to describe it is, if you have a mountain that you're going up, sometimes instead of going straight up the mountain, you're actually going in a spiral around it, and you are getting higher each time. So yeah, maybe I lapped this same part of the mountain before, and maybe that tree is familiar, but if you pay attention, it's 20 feet further down the slope than it was before. I'm higher up than I was before. And instead of getting discouraged by the fact that we're seeing some of the same old things, we can actually allow our spirit and our emotions to have an optimism of, Lord, I know this lesson. I know how to learn from this lesson. Yes, I've seen it before, but I believe that because I walked through this with you, I am better. I'm further ahead than I was before. And doing that has actually allowed me to scale my mountains much more quickly, because I don't allow discouragement to keep me down in the mud. But I actually go, yeah, this is familiar, but because of that, that's a benefit, right? The fact that it's familiar is actually to my benefit, because I know how to scale this part. And instead of going, oh no, I'm here again, I get to go, oh, well, this part's way easy. I know how to do this. You have an enemy who wants you isolated, alone, discouraged, and feeling helpless. And more than anything, he wants your eyes on yourself. When we set our eyes on ourselves and our own pain and what we're walking through, we actually can get stuck in a place where we're not able to grow, because all we see is the pain. It's kind of like you get a splinter and you just keep pushing on it and you keep pushing on it, and you're like, you know, the pain just doesn't go away until finally you stop messing with it. To grow, we've got to be able to lift our eyes up, first to him, but then also to the people around us. What's crazy about David is, in the middle of his deepest pain, I think actually one of the things that caused him to grow in his capability, see, he thought he was going to be taught kingship from a king. He was actually taught kingship from a cave. And from people that were the lowest of the low. He thought he was going to get it from the top. He got it from the bottom. And what would happen if, in the middle of our pain, instead of being stuck on me, we begin to lift our eyes up and we look out around us and go, what can I do in this environment to bring life? Just like Joseph in prison. What would happen if we said, this hurts, this is hard, but what do I have to bring life around me? Sometimes you have nothing. Listen, sometimes we're at rock bottom. We have nothing. Our emotions are depleted. It's too painful, and that's okay. So this isn't like a you should be, but sometimes you just need to be taken care of and to receive and to be walked through the process. But other times we're in this place because the Lord's actually saying, I want to move through you, but I need you to release what I've already put inside of you so I can pour more in. I want to have a flow in your life. And even in the middle of your pain, if you'll lift your eyes up, you'll actually see there's lessons to learn that can lead you into the next season. And David would not have encountered the next season without his mighty men. David would not have encountered kingship if he didn't have those malcontents that later became his greatest warriors and leaders in the kingdom. Here's my encouragement to us today. What would happen if we can lay what we're going through out before the Lord? And instead of laying down to the storm, and instead of trying to fight it and destroy it, we just go, God, I want to walk through this with you, and I want to soak up every lesson you have to give me. And even in the middle of this, I'm going to see how I can release your life into the places around me. I'm going to see how I can release your life in my marriage. I'm going to see how I can release your life in my home, to my kids, to my family, to people beyond, to this body. You know, sometimes sharing your brokenness is actually one of the greatest gifts that you can give. Sometimes sharing your pain and your story and your struggle is one of the most beautiful offerings that you can make, both to the Lord and to a community that loves you. So here's what I'd like to do. I want to put on a little worship, and I want to have Catherine and me are going to be up here, and if you'd like prayer, about any kind of a storm you are walking through, or maybe when you have walked through that you just don't feel recovered from, we'd love to just release peace over you. Because here's the last thing. When James gives this verse at the very beginning of what we talked about, and he says, your endurance grows even stronger, and it will release perfection into every part of your being until there is nothing missing and nothing lacking. That phrase that he's saying there, nothing missing, nothing lacking, that is the word shalom. Shalom means peace. But it doesn't just mean peace like feeling calm. It actually means nothing missing and nothing broken. So if you have something broken, or you feel like you have something missing, I just want to invite you to come up for prayer. If you don't need to come up for prayer, you can hang out and worship for a little bit and just be. If you want to be released and go home and go have lunch or hang out and talk a little bit, you're also welcome to do that. But I want to encourage us for just 1 minute to just close your eyes for just 1 minute. I want you to ask the Lord, do I have a storm I haven't processed or one I'm going through right now that you want to use to help me to grow?